We are here with Mardell Gunn. Mardell,
good morning,
good
Joni.
Good morning. Yeah. On this lovely, lovely morning.
Yeah. What? So, and...
Rebecca.
Well. Rebecca yeah. Brewery. Is just,
Brewery.
Brewery.
Yeah,
we're
where
close.
Have you been?
It's a little too early for that, but I'm close. It's
You're
Rebecca
Bloody
Brewer.
Bloody Murphy? What is it called? Bloody Mary this
yeah.
morning.
So,
hey, Rebecca.
Before we talk about our topic as for this morning, which is going to be seed starting, because mm-hmm. I bet you a lot of you out there is seed starting, I want to mention something that I just discovered as a result of our garden conference. It kind of led me into, there is a website out there for those of you who are looking at building greenhouses. There's a website that it's Yukon-based. A man by the name of Bob Sharp, who is, I guess, a leader in structure and greenhouse building up there, has put on a website. And I think it could be really valuable to people here because Whitehorse is the same latitude as us. So it's really good at looking at sun and some of those things that you have to consider in building a greenhouse. So it is yukongreenhouse.weebly.com. So Weebly. It, yeah, instead of Weekly, it's Weebly. So instead of the K, put in a B. But I'm sure that if you just Google Yukon Greenhouses, Yukon Greenhouse, it'll come up. So it's one of the more valuable ones, I think, because it's set for our latitude, which is so important. So we're going to talk about seed starting.
Yes,
so
we are.
What do you have started, Rebecca, at this point?
Well, I'm looking at the freezing cold wind blowing out of the north, and I'm looking at the 10 to 12 inches of snow in my yard and the solid ice, and I'm not too inspired. I have tomatoes going because I know they need it, mm-hmm. and but I haven't started anything else, probably not till middle of April for me.
And I have started my tomatoes and peppers. Mm-hmm. I get inspired midday every day when it's beautiful yeah. and sunny, and uh-huh. I think, oh, it's gardening right. time almost. And then at night I say, oh, yeah. we're a long ways away from that yet.
Right, and it's been really different from the last 2 years. I was just looking at my garden journals and talking to another friend who keeps a really good journal. And this time last year we had skunk cabbage all the way up, mm-hmm. and we had crocuses blooming, and she had all kinds of little bulbs starting up, and we're just way behind this year compared yeah. to the last 2 years.
Yeah, it's interesting, and you'd think we'd be ahead because we don't have any snow. I'm prepared for right. getting my garden in early, but the truth of the matter is that we are behind.
Yeah, it's hanging on. March yeah. is hanging on.
Yeah.
Feels like March today, for sure.
And that is one thing that Rebecca and I talked about this a little bit in preparation for this, in that we are in agreement, don't get your starts too early.
Yeah.
That's probably the biggest danger, and it's...
Right.
I think it's a human nature thing mm-hmm. for most gardeners. It's like, it's spring,
yeah.
I want to get them started.
What the plant starts off with is what it wants to expect for the rest of its life, basically. So... when you take it from that nice indoor environment and you put it out into the wind, the cold nights, mm-hmm. And all the torrential cold rain and the horrible things that Southeast Alaska is going to do to it, it's going to complain to you the whole time. So we like these short, herky little starts better than the big, gangly starts. And those big, gangly ones are going to have a harder time in the wind. And, mm-hmm. and it's better if the starts have time to get stronger as they grow, mm-hmm. So they can handle wind and temperature and everything else. So don't jump the gun and grow these giant starts.
Right. Giant, big starts do not necessarily lead to bigger plants. It's been
right.
my experience.
Yeah.
In fact, I've read and my experience shows most of the time, not all plants, some plants can be root bound, but most plants do not like being root bound. And it will... hamper them for the rest of their lives. So
right.
Pay attention to that. And when you buy starts, that's the other thing, too. You know, you mm-hmm. go into stores, and it's really tempting to see these nice, big, healthy starts. And
right.
Flowers, I find that I can get by with that. But most other vegetables and stuff, mm-hmm. watch it. Don't get really root-bound plants because they're probably not going to do you as well as other ones. So let's talk about how you actually do seed starting, Rebecca. I use soil blocks, and mm-hmm. I know you don't. How do you use
What? I just use those little recyclable plastic pots, and it was interesting, the difference. I was hoping you could talk to us about the difference between the plants that have been grown in a plastic pot versus the investment, investing in a soil blocker. Mm-hmm. What's the difference in the plants you're getting from that?
I find that with some plants, it really makes a big difference, because mm-hmm. the idea of soil blockers is that they air prune. You never get any root-bound anything, because mm-hmm. the roots come out to the edge of the soil mm-hmm. where there's no plastic pot or anything, and they stop. They say, oh, I can't grow here. Whereas in a plastic pot, they just grow and they grow around the edges. Mm-hmm. And so I find that I get very healthy seedlings. The problem for some is like cucumbers and fast growing ones that have big root systems.
Mm-hmm, like zucchini.
Like zucchini. Okay. Those you have to graduate from the smaller soil blocks to the bigger ones mm-hmm. really fast. Okay. So those are the only ones that I find that I don't like soil blocks for. Mm-hmm. The 4-inch soil blocks, you can buy them. And I've devised a way that I can make my own. Mm-hmm. But that's a little bit more complicated. But I would advocate my 2-inch soil blocks to anybody.
2-inch soil blocker.
Yeah, I really like those
and
a lot.
Much, do you remember how much you paid for that? And
They're expensive. But it's a one-time investment. Mm-hmm. They come from Europe, and they really are well-made. Mm-hmm. And it's a one-time investment, and they're pretty. And if you can share them with somebody.
That's what I was just going
to
say.
If you live next to somebody.
Yep.
Or
just
not
make
next
a bunch of soil blocks together one day, and then you don't have to.
And I let quite a few people use mine, and I say, mm-hmm. you know, take it for a day or so and make your soil blocks and then bring it back. And so that's a good way of doing soil blocks. Mm-hmm. The key that you have to spend a little bit of experience and time learning is your mix. And I do my own potting mix, which is I go and I buy the big bags of potting soil, mm-hmm. which is got the perlite and the peat moss or the core, all that kind of stuff. Then I add my own compost. Mm-hmm. I'll add a little bit of soil out of my garden or other parts and other pots. Mm-hmm. But with soil blocks, you've got to make sure that you've got something that's going to hold together.
Okay.
And all I can say is that with a little bit of experience, you'll figure out what doesn't and doesn't work.
Okay,
right, so
on
do
these
some
soil
trials.
Blocks,
mm-hmm.
Is this some kind of a gizmo that you have that
it's a little metal
compresses?
Yes,
the
it's
dirt.
A little metal thing, and you put it in the soil, and you make a little compact square.
Okay.
Yes, it's a little gizmo, is what it is. Yep.
Yeah. I love gizmos.
And they come in all different sizes. You can have 2-inch blocks, 3-inch blocks, 4-inch blocks. And now this year I'm actually doing – I've had this for a bunch of years. I start out with little babies. They're about a half inch in diameter on each side. And so that way you can start your seeds in a really small space and find out which ones are going to germinate before you put them into
the
bigger block.
To see if they're viable.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Interesting.
So,
one advantage of the soil blocker is you don't have to store a bunch of plastic pots.
Yes,
and
that
then
is an
eventually
advantage.
The pots are falling apart on you. Yeah. Another thing is people always say you're supposed to wash your pots before you start. I don't do that.
I know, I don't either.
With the soil blocker, you don't have to worry that
worry
you're transplant. You're moving a disease from last year onto your new plants. Because it's easy to clean that soil blocker. It's just a metal thing in a grid pattern. It's just a grid. And so it's easy and quick to clean, and then you don't have to look at all those dirty pots and go, ugh.
And so I think grid pattern, so you make more than one block at a time.
Yes. The one that was just talking about, you make four at a time.
Okay, and so it's like an ice cube, well, those old-fashioned ice cube trays.
Yes, exactly.
Kind
and
of.
The one that I use the most has four at a time.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I have another one that does six at a time. That's a 3-inch blocker. The 4-inch is only one at a time. And so, yeah, you make a little grid. And that's the other advantage of soil blockers, I think, is that you can fit a lot more in a tray. Because they're right next to each other.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
so if you have limited space
to do
your starts, that's pretty handy.
It's nice for that.
Right.
So
cool.
But it's certainly not necessary. I mean, for many years, I did plastic pots, and you're a successful gardener, and you're using plastic pots, so it's not necessary. But it is a little, if you like gizmos, it's a nice one. So the other day you were talking about the 25% rule. I like that. Idea.
Oh, right. This is one that I've learned the hard way with brassicas. There's always losses with brassicas. And
once they get into the soil, you mean?
Yeah, once I've planted them out, something always happens. And that's kind of the strange thing about doing transplants, which is not how nature does it. nature just puts out a million seeds and lets the strongest successful win. We're taking one plant that we've babied along, and then we're gambling on this particular plant. So it's kind of
And we get mad
when the little cutworm comes along and mows it down. And when nature says, oh, okay, I'm going to put out 25 of these, and I know that probably half of them will make it. So anyway, we're compensating for that, and we're planting 25% extra. So if you say, I want to have 20 living broccoli plants, I know that's what I want to have in the end. Well, I'm going to plant at least 5 extra plants, and I'm going to have them in reserve. And it's good to plant them a little bit later so they don't get too big and gangly.
Oftentimes what I try to do in the perfect situation, about the time that I put the transplants out into the garden, I will plant other ones because I know that I'm going I'm always going to lose a few. And just about the time I throw out the ones that I have in reserve is when the root maggots come and kill one of my plants or something. So I try to keep them. Last year I kept them way into July, and I actually replaced a couple, and it's nice to have them reserve. Otherwise, you have a hole in that place when the plant dies.
Could be producing, and so to resist the urge to give away your extra transplants.
That's right.
Because you're probably going to want it after the mouse comes along or, you know, whatever little beasties are out there mowing your plants down.
Yeah, good idea. So let's talk a little bit. I have a bunch of people. One question that we got that I wanted to address. Somebody said, what's the difference between soil potting mix and seed starting mix? Well, to my knowledge, and I am not a manufacturer anything, but seed starting mix to me doesn't have any perlite in it. It's really fine, usually just peat moss, meaning that you can put it on top of your seeds and there's nothing that's going to keep the little seed from sprouting through that. And so it's a more fine mix, whereas potting soil has perlite, those little white things mixed in, and it may have chunks of moss or something in it. I don't use seed starting mix all the time.
I don't either.
You don't use it at all.
I just use straight up potting soil.
Yeah.
But I just actually never even considered using that other stuff.
There you go. So that's
right. If you wanted to be really professional about it, you could probably use that.
And I suppose I'm thinking of some flower seeds that are really, really fine. There might be difficulty in coming through. But again, I kind of do the thing if I just plant enough so that if one or two seeds get inhibited by a little piece of rock or something on top, there's going to be another one that comes up. So, I would like to talk a little bit about
making. Are you going to tell how you make your potting soil?
In terms of
how you mix your stuff?
Yeah, what I do is I take about a third of the potting soil mix that I just buy, and then a third compost, and then the other third is kind of a mix of my old potting soil, maybe a little bit of soil out of the garden. Be careful not to put too much soil out of your garden. That does not work. Just don't think you can just take soil out of your garden and use that for potting soil because it gets too hard. Your plants don't like that. They need more lightness in that starting. But you can add a little bit. You can
If it's in the mix, it seems like it was fine.
And I used to put fertilizer in my seed starting in that mix that I just described. I've decided that I don't necessarily need to do that. My compost has good stuff in it, and so the plants can get something from that. And I use foliar feeders. I use a dilute solution when I water my plants about every third time I water my seedlings, I'll put a dilute solution of some compost tea or maxi crop or I kind of mix it up, different things. And I kind of fertilize them that way rather than putting it in the soil mix.
Right. That's what I've done, too, is use the nettle water when I'm cooking nettles.
Yeah, I thought that was a good idea.
And then I have green water left from cooking nettles at that time of year. And so I put it into my plant water, just dilute it down. I'm not very scientific about
it. Yeah, I'm not either.
And at least half and half or more. And so there's just like kind of green water going onto the plants, and they seem to really like that. Just one note, though, I want to make sure you don't put compost that isn't finished into your potting mix. I've done that before where the compost was just too hot still, and it was killing the plants. So, anyway.
So one thing, we've got just a short little time to say, I want to give a little bit of an idea. Mm-hmm. Tomatoes and peppers right now, mm-hmm. brassicas in mid-April is yes. when you start yours. The majority of things I start in mid-April. Yep. And then the cucurbits, meaning squash, cucumbers, that sort of thing, mm-hmm. probably not until early May. They only right. need about 3 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks before you put them out, right?
Yep. And then the last thing we were starting inside was green beans because they yes. really want that warm yep. start. And my plants were so much happier last year mm-hmm. because I didn't just stick the seeds in the ground. I started them inside, transplanted them, and it was worth mm-hmm. it. They were way happier. And with the squash and those guys, we were using a heat mat because they
That's
want
true.
That 75 yeah. degree soil temperature to start. Once they're started, they're fine. Yeah. But they want that initial hot start.
It helps. It helps.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you so
Happy
much.
Happy gardening.
Okay.